Hello, my loves. I have a bit of a palate cleanser in store for us today, considering that my last four episodes were a series on how to heal with anxiety. So we went from social anxiety disorder and OCD to pretending that you have it all together. Actually, we don't pretend that we have it all together. We do have it all together. We can accomplish so many things. We always pull it off. But underneath the surface, there is this worry, this perfectionism that's driven by unhealed stuff. Anyway, that's what we've been doing for the last 4 weeks. If you want to get in there for some healing, those are episodes 102, 3, 4, and 5. Here we are at episode 106. Keeping with our new tradition, I'm going to give you the gifty code. I love giving the present at the beginning. So the next offering we have is a workshop called How to Heal for Real. I've just put the finishing touches on it. It is deep. Here's the premise, that there is a higher-minded way to work with our pain instead of against our pain, because it's really attachment that causes suffering. Now, here's the tricky terrain. If we're attached, overly attached to healing on our own timeline, then we actually just pile more pain on top of the pain. We turn the pain into suffering. So I'm going to be asking and answering questions like, what's the role of attachment when we want to get out of pain? What's the result of trying to heal with force? Is pain inevitable? Does that mean that suffering is optional? I'll just give you the quick answer to that. Pain is inevitable, yes. And suffering is most definitely optional. Can we give our pain too much attention, or should we try and run from it? What's the higher desire that helps us heal? How do our thoughts and speech affect our healing? How does sympathetic resonance, beautiful topic that I'm going to unpack, help us come into balance? Okay, so this is a workshop. How to Heal for Real. It's happening on Thursday, April 4th. It's going to be 90 minutes. I usually go over time. And you can choose to learn, you can choose to do this workshop in your own style. So you can be there live for the 90 minutes. That's super cool. Or you can do the audiobook. I'm creating an audiobook out of all of my workshops now. Or you can catch the video replay. You get a slide deck. You get a list of all the resources that I mention. So the teaching is yours. You own it. This is not like renting stuff. It's yours to go back to more than once, which I highly recommend with this kind of material. So it's going to be metaphysical. It's going to be wildly practical. My prayer is that this workshop will be an obliteration of outmoded thinking when it comes to our pain and our healing. So bring that pain with you. Bring your notes. Bring your beautiful open minds, because we are going to be there to heal. If you are in our heart-centered membership, this is part of what we do every month now, a workshop to set you up for the month that you can learn from in whatever style works for you. If you're not in my heart-centered membership already, come on in, or you can drop into just this workshop for $37. Now, here's the gifty. If you go to daniellaporte.com/how to heal and you use the checkout code POD106, POD106, then you get $7 off of the How to Heal for Real workshop. Because this is time sensitive, the coupon is valid until the workshop begins, which is 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on Thursday, April 4th. Most of my things happen on Thursdays, unless, of course, it's Wednesday and it's a new podcast. So daniellaporte.com/how to heal. And we get such lovely feedback from our class attendees and from our membership. The last class we did, Colleen Kay said, wow, this was exactly the reframe I needed. I love giving the reframes. Omega J says, thank you so much. This was so needed and this is so transformative. Cindy W, amazing content. I appreciate learning about the differences in anxiety types. I'm already looking forward to the next class. And that's how we do it over in the heart-centered community. Okay. Today's conversation is a Q&A. I did a poll on my Instagram, at Danielle Laporte. How can I help? How can I be of service? And the intention was, after my Healing with Anxiety 4-part series, I thought, why don't we lighten it up? But I should know better, because we're getting questions like, Talk about starting over after your divorce. How do you balance love and light with wanting to take the whole fucking system down? So let's get into it, shall we? All right, I decided to do these questions on a first come, first serve basis, and I'm going to just go off the cuff here. So JB Jean 42 is asking, if you could do a, quote, do-over, what would it be? To which I have to say, JB Jean 42, girlfriend, we don't have that long. I want to do it all over, if I'm really honest, and try to only ever be really honest. The first things that come to my mind have to do with sleeping with men. There was this cowboy, and I should have been more assertive. He was a bit coy, which is not how I like to roll. And I should have just really put it out there because that could have been a hot night in Toronto. There was a cook who I wish I didn't sleep with, wish I could have done that over. Or maybe I would have done it over and done him differently. I would love to do over every single talk I've ever given on stage. I would love to do over every class I've ever given. I'd love to do over every book I've ever written because hindsight, right? Because I'm wiser today at 3:54 p.m. Pacific than I was at 9 a.m. Pacific today. I feel like I could just be more articulate. I could be more powerfully gentle. I could be fierce in the right ways. I could have been less arrogant. I could have been more revealing. I could have been more patient and listening to the question. I could have been more illuminating. I could have been more pure-minded, which would have lifted up the vibration of the room. I could have been a more effectual healer. Boom. That's why I want to redo everything. And here we are. I would do over every single one of my tattoos. Every single one of them. I have a heart tattoo on my left ankle that I got in Albuquerque 100 years ago. And it said, breathe love. It has like a little banner across it. But now over time, it just kind of says, breathe love. And that was just like an unnecessary tattoo. Dumb. The classic 50s heart on the left ankle. I have a circle on my right inner forearm that's about the size of the base of a small teacup. And the circle's too big. The circle represents, at the time, it was like, hey, I'm open, but I have boundaries. And it was also a Buddhist nod to shunyata, which is we are empty and yet we are full of form at the same time. And also the design is really difficult to execute. So I loved that. I kind of love the shishi. I love the pretense of it, right? But it's too big. I wish it was smaller. I have a butterfly on my ass, upper ass, that was really a cover-up of someone's name, of a guy's name. Could have done that over. So wrong guy. Dude is bending down to like just drop the needle on my ass to ink, and he says, you know, this is the kiss of death to the relationship, right? As soon as you tattoo the name, the relationship's over. And I was like, shut up and put it on me. But here's the thing. Here's the big, beautiful thing. I have no regrets. Endless do-overs if I had the opportunity. I don't know, would I even do it over? Who's got time to do anything over? I want to be here. I want to keep making progress, moving forward, goodwill, always upward, you know? So yeah, thanks to heart-centered living, I have no regrets. All right, switching questions. Hillary, hello, love. I can always count on you to get right in there with a question. So Hillary R. is asking, talk about starting over after divorce. Okay. Well, this is how I describe my divorce process. It was like having my bones broken very, very slowly, one by one. That is how devastated, decimated, discombobulated, agonized I felt after divorce. We were together for 14 years altogether, married for 10. Now, let me just press pause and get in a teaching here. So one thing I often talk about in the Heart Center membership, you should be in there, is the place from which you speak about your past pain. And that the more we retell our old agony stories, the more we pull in that old energy that we're trying to heal from. So you don't want to drag the past into your future, right? So we can tell, ideally, we can retell stories of our past pains from the intention to heal it because we're telling it in a different way, because we have new insight about it, because we can apply more love to that hurtful story. We recount the story with the intention to turn it into a teachable, which is what I'm going to do here. Okay, so where was I? Broken bones, broken heart. Well, I definitely overcorrected with the boundaries, the beginning process. So I did not really allow my former husband, my baby daddy, to come on my property for about 5 years. In the beginning, it just caused me so much anxiety, like actual anxiety. My nervous system got so jacked from us being in the same space. Notice I didn't say his presence because I'm part of that. So it wasn't just something he was doing to me because he was, you know, in my living room. It was how I was with him as well. And I just couldn't. And I actually talked to a child psychologist about the whole situation. How's, you know, what's the best way to care for my child and give me the one-on-one on co-parenting? And she said, you know, ideally, of course, if you can be amicable in front of your child, that's great. And if you're getting so dysregulated from being in the same space together, then maybe it's best to just have him meet you at the corner. Meet you at the sidewalk and you do the kid exchange, you know? And so we did that for a long time. And I needed about a year to just get my head on straight. And I didn't have much patience for people who weren't divorced, who didn't have much patience for me. You know, people who hadn't been with the same kind of grief, or at least weren't spacious enough to hold my grief at the time. You know, I did get a lot of, it's been a year and you're still in this. We were together for like, what? 14 years. Like after years, you're still kind of just separating your spoons. Who's going to get this ceramic vase? Who you just got, your sofa just came in. Yeah. And then you have the whole thing with dating. Who's going to date first? And how does one accidentally find out that the dating is happening through the child, through a text sent to the wrong person? You have all those little micro dramas, which are like grenades in your kitchen and your underpants. And I had a lot of therapy. I was also working with, you know, I had an astrologer. I had a shaman. I had all the people. And then I started to pull up and out of it. And almost immediately, once I got the new sofa, I was like, all right, I am so hot to date. And that did not turn out the way I thought it was going to turn out after divorce. It was a long time because I was walking through the world essentially with this attitude, like, I am so ready for the one. I am such a queen and I'm just going to magnetize my king. And my whole life, my whole stage of my life is set for this fantastic love. But really, I was walking through the world saying to any male creature who was even a remote contender, don't even think about it. Like I was still so unhealed. I thought like nobody's good enough for me. But really what it was I don't think I felt that I was good enough for that dream. And I was effectively single for 8 years until I met my person, you know, my capital P person. And there were some dalliances and a real tragic relationship in between all of that and a couple hot situations. But there was not a committed, ongoing relationship, nothing more than 6 months. And then bazang, here we are. I'm getting married in a matter of weeks. But that's not the important part of the story. I mean, it's the juiciest part. It's the most important part in my life right now. The important part, the healing part, hopefully the inspiring chapter, is the day I invited my former husband. I don't love the term ex, you know. They still exist. They're still a human being, right? I invited S to come into my home for tea. And I apologized to him for being such a bag for those 5 years. And there were lots of things. Maybe a list that I even thought was longer than my shit list. There were lots of things that I think he legit owed me apologies, plural, for. But, and none of them, by the way, was infidelity. That wasn't our jam. But that day still remains a defining moment in my life. It was so healing. I felt high on the elixir of love to just fess up. I just melted. And I committed because, you know, a real apology, a full apology has to include, at least in my book, has to include a commitment to not go backwards, going forwards. So sorry for being a bag. I imagine that was no fun for you. It's no fun for me either. And I could have been so much warmer. I could have been so much friendlier. I'm sorry for the pain I caused. And I'm down with friendliness from here on out. And it just so happened. It's the bonus, but it doesn't even really matter. He offered the most surprising, because of its content, most surprising, heartfelt, melty apology to me. I didn't need it. I was so high on asking for forgiveness for myself. But that's really when I'd say the carnage of divorce turned into nectar. Okay, I really want to thank Jade G, for asking me very precise palate cleansing in the truest sense questions. Number one, what's in your bag? Well, guess what? I'm not really a bag person. If I could live more like a dude and just have a wallet, I would. But I don't want to carry my phone too close to my body because high radiation tumors. I have, what do you call, one of those little side bags. They're really the evolution of the fanny pack, although you can't say fanny pack in the UK because that means like your pussy pack. So the side things, and just full admission, I bought it for like around $30 at Uniqlo in Soho, New York. And I feel super guilty about it because I'm sure a 10-year-old girl with one light bulb hanging over her head in a fast fashion factory made it. And we should all stay away from Uniqlo. But it was the right color and I really wanted it. And I was schlepping around New York and I just like, this is the answer to everything. So in that bag, I have a very tiny fold over wallet that just carries a few dollar bills and some credit cards. It's from Samara Bags. They bill themselves as a cruelty-free fashion house. Vegan leather, which is often just another way of saying fancy plastic. Anyway, I actually really love their stuff and I carry the mini accessory. It's actually called the mini. It's $88 Canadian, comes in a bunch of different styles. I'll leave a link for you in the show notes. I always, always have lip balm in my bag. I have it in every pocket. Soft lips, they're my thing. They're also my man's thing. And I always have some headphones and I don't wear earbuds, ear pods, whatever those things, those alien things are that you put in your ears because those will fry your brain. I'm not into it. I'm always amazed when I see wellness influencers online talking about gluten-free and anti-inflammatory living, and they have those buds in their ears just frying the whole situation. Okay, what's in my fridge? What's in my fridge are some meals that have been prepared for me. So this is a fancy pants, but not too luxurious, big life change that I made last year. I am running a business. I'm writing. I'm podcasting. I have a son who's an adult, but my roommate, who I still like to really care for a lot. There's a wedding to plan. There's a man to spend time with. There's yoga. There's running. There's my circadian rhythm. I don't love cooking. So every Tuesday, I have about 4 or 5 days worth of meals delivered to me. I live in Vancouver, from a company called Be Nourished. I adore them. The week before, I get to make my choices on what I'd like. Right now, I am currently eating meat, although meat and me are about to break up. I'm feeling the call to go back to vegetarianism, if not veganism again. It's a whole long story. I'm going to do a podcast just on that. So I have these beautiful meals delivered in these glass containers. I wash them out. We send back the containers. I get new meals. In my fridge, you will also find some Bio-K, the vegan version probiotic. You will find some Floradex, the big, big bottle of the iron supplement. I take 2 shots a day. You will also find some sauerkraut, little hit of fermented something during the day to help my gut recover from life on the planet right now, and antibiotics. You will always find some form of cheese. In fact, you will find multiple forms of cheese. And you will find a mason jar half full of water with celery, cut up celery. You will find a container with water and cut up carrots. Just the act of chopping up my vegetables for snacks on Sunday nights changes my whole week. Okay, here's a hard right turn. This is from Aaron. Thoughts on conscious celibacy. I'm feeling like a relationship detox. Girlfriend, do it. If you are feeling like it or you're not feeling like it, you got to follow that. I think conscious celibacy, where you're just like, I could, but I'm not going to, for loving reasons that have to do with cleansing, purification, getting my head on straight, reexamining my priorities, raising my vibration, getting old thought forms out of my mind and my energetic field. All those reasons. Raise your vibration. You will get a higher vibe person coming into your life when you're ready to ride again. Yeah, I think it's really under-practiced. I think sometimes the soul will put us through long spates of celibacy and we're complaining the whole time, wanting to get laid, but the soul knows what's best. The soul is kind of giving us an unconsciously chosen detox, but we need to keep all of our bodies clean, mental body, the astral, which is to say your emotional body, physical body, your energetic body. I believe that, you know, the majority, half, if not more, of spiritual practice is about cleansing so that we can remove the debris, remove the illusions that have us make poor choices, choices from fear, choices from unhealed stuff, egoing choices instead of loving choices. And that requires some celibacy, some detoxing, some silence, some solitude. And then we come out of those things and it's time to party. Okay, this question is from Rachel, and I can always count on Rachel for depth. So this is a hot one. Why do you think so many of our peers aren't talking about GAZA and how to shift? So I'm recording this podcast and it will air in March of 2023. Let me back up and tell you a story around my opinions around why people sometimes are silent in challenging times. So if you go check out episode 99, it's called 15 Reasons People Don't Speak Out in Challenging Times. And I went through a really varied list of options that go from some of us don't speak out because of previous trauma, understandable. Some of us don't speak out because we are terrified of the impacts of cancel culture, also totally understandable. Some of us don't speak out because the situation at hand touches our grief so deeply, we just become so dysregulated. We can't even imagine going near the topic. And some of us don't speak out because of cowardice. We don't want to lose our job, our social status, our money, all those things. Some of us don't speak out because we, for better or for worse, either in earnest or really naively, believe that our silence will actually help keep the peace. So I come out with this episode, as I do every week whenever I put up a new podcast. We take out a little segment of the podcast and we put it up on Instagram just as a teaser for people to click through and then go listen to the full episode. And the teaser we pulled out for that episode was the 30 seconds where I say, some people, for better or for worse, are silent about things because they feel like they're actually contributing to keeping the peace. So when we first launched the podcast, like the first week it came out, and for about 3 weeks after there, until I had an incident around it, it was one of my most highly praised episodes ever. There were so many people who came forward and said, thank you, I have so much more compassion, less judgment for all the people who've been silent around a topic that I think everybody should be speaking about. I hadn't seen it in these various ways. There were lots of people who thanked me for doing what they thought was a courageous move to talk about compassionate approaches to all forms of activism, whether it's bold and emblazoned or it's silent, and also have compassion for, you know, what in some cases, and this is really between the person and their soul, in some cases is just ego-driven cowardice. So that whole conversation was really held, as far as I could tell, in high regard. Until one weekend, somebody took it out of context and they took that 30-second clip I had about, hey, some people are silent because it's their way of keeping the peace. And without reading the show notes, without listening to the podcast, without searching through all of my other posts or looking at my stories on a regular basis where I have been consistently, diligently, very clearly speaking out about my call for peace in the Middle East. I have used the terms genocide. I have been open about my prayers for Gaza, and I have been doing so since October 7th, also praying for hostages and everybody that is in turmoil over this absurd, agonizing conflict. And because that sound clip was taken out of context, some people put this headline over it that I was one of the many silent influencers who were not speaking out about this issue, when in fact, nothing could be further from the truth. So I had to deal with like this little kind of cancel tornado for a couple days, which was really heartbreaking because it was Wacky Wednesday. It's one thing to be canceled for something you actually did and you stand on that ground and you deal with the truth and the untruth in that. It's another thing to be canceled for something that's completely false. As time has gone on and we're approaching day 170 something of this genocide, I am a slightly more shocked at the extent of people's silence around this issue. And I think, you know, people in our, quote, industry, the self-help space, they are in one of those 15 reasons I have listed about why people don't speak out in challenging times. And I, in the beginning of all of this, And I could say I'm still holding steady, really suspended a lot of my judgment around silence because of all the different reasons, because I don't know someone's karma, because lots of people choose their lane and that's all they have the energy for, because we don't know what's going on in people's lives. I can tell you there are people in very visible positions that are fighting for their own lives, that are doing everything they can with a crew of people every day to just keep their shit together. They're dealing with mental health issues. They are in love with people, supporting people who are fighting for their lives. Like you never know. But this is the really important part, a key part in Rachel's question. Why do you think so many of our peers aren't talking about GAZA? Why do I spell it out? Because censorship. But I've said so much already in this episode. This could lead to shadow banning and all those ridiculous things. We need to be asking ourselves why there are words that we cannot use in public spaces. Follow the money. But anyway, a really keynote in the question is, and how to shift? And how to shift? So I have a question back, which is how to shift what? How to shift one's own agony over other people's silence about genocide? Or conflict, or how to shift them into becoming people who speak up. And this is just my really personal answer. I mean, here we are. It's all really personal. I don't have a desire to implore, cajole, activate anybody into speaking up when they're not comfortable with speaking up. It's their karma. It's their path. I can't dictate. I don't want the karma of dictating. I don't want the karma of pressurizing anybody into doing something they feel uncomfortable about. If you hear, read, see anything from me that inspires you to shift in any way, that's just because we had a micro moment of being aligned where my so-called wisdom just tickled your inner light, your innate wisdom. It really has nothing to do with me. It's all you showing up in the right place at the right time. And you just heard something that awakened the knowledge that you already had. So can we shift it? I don't know. Should that be the focus? My personal focus is being in fervent prayer, doing all that I can every day to embody peace, doing all that I can every day to manage the ravaging on my nervous system that is currently life on this planet. It's just been in the last couple months, actually, that I've had to admit with deep compassion that I am not impervious to stress. And that the situation in Palestine and the Sudan and in the Congo, where rape is used as a tactic of war, has been for 20 years now. And the situation in the downtown east side of Vancouver, where you can't walk down an alley without seeing multiple people shooting up. I mean, you know, I just, all the situations. My focus is on staying well so that I can inspire other people to create conditions of healing in the way that works for them on their particular path with their soul lineage. Whew. That's my answer. Those are all my answers, and I'm sticking to it. Oh, thank you. Thank you for all the different layers and colors of questions. I got more, so I'm going to do more Q&A episodes. If you want to send me a question, you can email support@daniellaporte.com. If you are listening to this podcast the day it drops, which is Wednesday, April 3rd, keep in mind that tomorrow, Thursday, April 4th, I'm doing a really deep, gorgeous workshop called How to Heal for Real. We're going to be there for about 90 minutes. If you cannot be there live, if your learning style is to listen or to watch, you are going to get an audiobook of the workshop. You will get the replay of the video to own, and you will get the notes of all the resources that I mention. If you go to daniellelaporte.com/how-to-heal and you enter the code POD106, POD106, you'll get $7 off the workshop fee, which brings it down to $30. If any of these questions, if any of these answers have inspired you, comforted you, or are something that you think anybody else could benefit from, it really helps to infuse the algorithm with light by actually subscribing to the podcast, or of course, going to leave a lovely review. Now let me leave you with a question. This actually comes from my How to Be Loving journal. What is the most compassionate response that you could have to the hardship in your own life and to that in the world? What's the most compassionate response you could have to the hardship in your own life and to the hardship in the world? I'm so glad you're here. I'll see you next Wednesday. With love, Danielle. Thank you so much for listening, for feeling, for spreading the word. With love.